village. Strangely, Jamie felt no anger, only a deep, aching, sullen remorse, the kind of pain that grips the heart when a dream is shattered. Dex had finished talking. His image waited frozen on the laptop's small screen. Jamie looked out through the open doorway of his cubicle toward the rusty red rock-strewn ground. "Mars is dying," he heard Zeke Larkin say, and he knew that Zeke was right. This is a dying world, and we're dying with it. Fingering the communicator clipped to his ear, Jamie said, "Dex, the answer is no. Thanks for your effort. I know you think you're doing what needs to be done, but no, not now, not while I live." He turned off the laptop, knowing it would take more than 10 minutes for his reply to reach Earth. God knows how long it'll take Dex to react. Jamie shook his head. "It doesn't matter what his reaction is. It doesn't matter if he quits the program altogether and cuts off his foundation's funding completely. None of that matters." Yet Jamie knew he was wrong. He was cutting off the exploration team's lifeblood. While it might take 1 million years for the last Martian lichen to shrivel and die from lack of water, the human explorers on Mars would disappear in a matter of months for lack of funds. Billy Greycloud had raised his fist to rap on the partition of Dr. Waterman's office, but saw that Jamie was staring intently at his laptop screen, comm unit clipped to his ear. "He won't want to be disturbed," Greycloud thought. He turned and went to the cafeteria, sipped briefly at a mug of weak coffee, then walked back to the cubicle. The laptop was closed now. Dr. Waterman was sitting stiffly in his little chair, staring at infinity. "Dr. W?" Jamie stirred and focused on Greycloud. "Billy, what is it?"
"Got a minute?"
With a nod, "Sure, come in." Greycloud settled onto the only other chair in the cubbyhole, his long legs bumping the wobbly little table on which the laptop sat, his knees poking up awkwardly.
"It's the translation, sir."
"What about it, Billy?"
"It's not going anyplace. I've tried about 100 sets of words, you know, definitions for each of the symbols, but they don't make any sense."
Jamie smiled tiredly. "Maybe the 101st.
"Maybe.
Or the 1,000th. Greycloud started to reply, hesitated, then asked,
"Are we going to be here that long?"
Cellini, Nanolab. "I haven't been in here since Chris Cardenas left for the Saturn habitat," said Doug Stavanger.
"She was a great scientist," Doreen McManus said.
"Still is, I suppose," Stavanger replied. "Way out there in orbit around Saturn." Cellini's nanotechnology laboratory was quiet and almost empty at this time of the evening. All the regular staff had left for the day. The reactors, where virus-sized nanomachines were working, ran silently, turning raw materials, such as carbon powder, into sheets of pure diamond structural material for spacecraft. New nanomachines were incubating in other reactors, behind sealed hatches. Faint bluish light strips ran along the ceiling, ultraviolet lamps whose light could deactivate any nanodevices that somehow escaped the confinement of the reactors and incubators. Safety was a paramount concern in the nanolab, even after many years of secure operation. No one wanted an accident that unleashed all-consuming nanomachines into the underground community of Cellini. No one dreaded the gray goo problem more than the scientists and technicians of the nanolab staff.
"This is my cubbyhole here," Doreen said as she led Stavanger to a small desk at the end of a workbench.
He nodded, looked around, and pulled up a small wheeled chair as she sat in the padded desk chair.
"She looks nervous," Stavanger thought,
big gray-green eyes staring out like a frightened kid's. "There's nothing to be frightened of," he said, trying to reassure her. "Dex Trumbull isn't an ogre."
She tried to smile. "I know. It's just that, well, I know enough about Dr. Waterman. He's not going to like my proposal. Not at all."
Stavanger made a nonchalant shrug. "That's his decision. Right now, I think you owe it to the people working on Mars to let Trumbull know what you can do."
"Dr. Waterman's going to hate it," Doreen said in a small, almost whispering voice. Be that as it may, your idea may save the entire Mars operation. The desk phone chimed. Doreen flinched visibly at the sound. Stavanger glanced at his wristwatch. He's right on time. Dex Trumbull's face took form on the phone screen. Stavanger introduced himself, then gestured toward Doreen. After the usual pleasantries, Stavanger got down to the point. Ms. McManus made a very interesting presentation to our governing board about the possibilities of using nanotechnology to enlarge the area on Mars where people can live and work. I thought that you and your Mars Foundation people ought to hear about it. Trumbull's sharp, hard eyes flicked from Stavanger to Doreen and back again. Okay, I'm listening. Doreen began to speak, hesitantly at first, but then with growing confidence and enthusiasm. After half an hour, Dex interrupted. Wait a minute. You're saying that you can create a completely Earth-like environment that's kilometers wide? As large as you want it, Doreen said, nodding vigorously. You can make it an ongoing operation, constantly enlarging the Earth-like area. Under a dome, said Dex. Yes, it would have to be enclosed, of course. Stavanger interjected. It wouldn't be totally Earth-like. The gravity would still be at the Martian level. That's not a problem, Dex said. As long as people could live under the dome in a shirt-sleeve environment. They could wear bikinis, Doreen said. Dex smiled. Most of the tourists we'd bring to Mars would look awful in bikinis. But, on the other hand... Boston. Trumbull Trust Headquarters. More in sorrow than in anger, Dex said to himself. Remember that. More in sorrow than in anger. Jamie's a stubborn son of a bitch, but that's who he is, and there's no sense getting sore about it. You just have to do what you have to do. Despite the brilliant sunshine and crystal blue sky, it was chilly up on the windswept roof of the Trumbull Tower. Roland Kinnear was trying to smile bravely, but it was clear that the gusts whipping in from the harbor cut through his light summer-weight suit jacket and turned his perpetual smile into something of a grimace. Not like Hawaii, he said to Dex, raising his voice over the rush of the wind. You want to go back downstairs? Dex asked. Kinnear shrugged. In a minute or two. I figure you brought me up here for a reason. Dex studied his old schoolmate's round, normally cheerful face. I wanted this conversation to be strictly private, Raleigh. Just between you and me. Kinnear's light blonde brows furrowed. You don't trust your staff? Sure I do, Dex said. But I don't want to run the risk of somebody accidentally overhearing us. Kinnear thought that over for a moment, then asked, Can we get out of this wind at least? Dex laughed, then took Kinnear by the elbow and led him to the other side of the roof where they were sheltered by the bulk of the structure that housed the building's cooling tower. From this angle, he could see the city's busy streets, and across the Charles River, the gray utilitarian buildings of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Harvard's red brick colonial-style campus was off to their left, half hidden among the flaming trees in their autumnal colors. Further on toward the horizon, past more colorful trees and stately slim white church steeples was Lexington, and the common where a handful of Minutemen tried to make a stand against the British Army. It's pretty, Kinnear said, with all the trees in color. They say we might even get some snow this winter, Dex said wistfully. It looks beautiful, all in white. Out of the wind, Kinnear relaxed enough to put his pleasant smile back on. So, what do you want to talk about, Dex? Mars, what else? You're in bad shape, from what I hear. We're bleeding to death, Dex admitted. That damned priest's just about killed us. He didn't do himself any good, either, Kinnear grinned. Yeah, but now we've got people blaming us for his death. We're getting really nasty mail. Calling us priest-killers, making threats. Anything serious? I've doubled our security. There's a lot of nuts out there. Dex shook his head. Priest-killers, he muttered. So your money flow? Down to a trickle. Less. I still think the tourism idea could fly, Kinnear said, obviously trying to brighten Dex's mood. That's what I want to talk to you about. My people tell me Waterman turned you down flat. You've got a line into my private office, Dex said. I figured as much. Widening his smile, Kinnear said, We're talking a ton of money here, Dex. I have to protect my investment.